Father, Son, and Holy Ghost.
Hello, my friends. Welcome back to our Through the Bible, Through the Year podcast. This is Josh Swanson, lead pastor at Christ Church in Sierra Madre. So today we are going to be launching out in a new study in what is arguably one of the most explosive and compelling and formative and revolutionary stories in the history of the human race. We're going to be talking about the Exodus. It also provided fodder, we must note, for what was DreamWorks' best animation feature film of all time, The Prince of Egypt. I mean, you were not going to go wrong with Val Kilmer and, you know, as Moses, come on. And Steve Martin and Jeff Goldblum and Sandra Bullock and Michelle Pfeiffer. I mean, an all-star cast. It's spectacular. If you haven't watched it in a while, you might want to go and hit pause on the podcast and go watch it right now. but I wanted to begin by just talking about how influential this book has been throughout, you know, the history of the world by beginning by talking about its influence on our own nation. So in a fascinating book entitled Moses, America's Prophet, author Bruce Feller traces the impact of Moses and the Exodus story on American history. And his thesis in this book is intriguing, to say the least. He argues that Moses and the Exodus are central to our formation as a nation. He writes, Moses was an American icon long before there was an America. So when the pilgrims left England in 1620, they described themselves as, quote, the chosen people fleeing from their pharaoh, King George. And on the Atlantic, they proclaimed that their journey was as vital as Moses and the Israelites when they came out of Egypt. And then when they arrived at Cape Cod, they thanked God for letting them pass through their fiery Red Sea. And then by the time of the Revolution, Moses had become the go-to narrative of American freedom. In 1751, the Pennsylvania Assembly chose a quote from the five books of Moses for its state liberty bill, and it was from Leviticus 25:10, proclaim liberty throughout the land to all the inhabitants thereof. And when the Continental Congress chose a new image for the seal of the United States, Thomas Jefferson and Benjamin Franklin argued strongly that they ought to choose Moses. John Adams, incidentally, went for Hercules, you know, go figure. But in their eyes, Moses was the true founding father. And after the Revolutionary War, just as a reluctant Moses led the Israelites out of Egypt and handed down the Ten Commandments, a reluctant George Washington led the colonists to victory and presided over the drafting of the Constitution. And the parallel was not lost. You know, two-thirds of the eulogies at Washington's death compared him to guess who? Moses, you know? And during the dark night of slavery, it was Moses and the Exodus story that inspired abolitionists and slaves alike. You know, abolitionist William Lloyd Garrison nicknamed Harriet Tubman as Moses for the way she led her people out of slavery and into freedom. And Go Down Moses was called the national anthem of the slaves. And Abe Lincoln talked about the Exodus at Gettysburg, and at his death, he was also, like Washington, compared to Moses. And the same is true for the civil rights movement. You know, on the night before he was assassinated, with that classic line, I've been to the mountaintop and I've seen the promised land, Dr. King was comparing himself to Moses. And in our own generation, you know, George W. Bush said in an Oval Office interview that he was inspired to run for president by a sermon by a pastor in Texas who said that Moses was a man not eloquent with words, and yet still he led his people to freedom. And Barack Obama said in 2007 that the civil rights leaders were the Moses generation, but he was part of the Joshua generation that would find our way across the river. And it's not just the political figures, you know, also our national icons have been inspired by Moses and the Exodus story. You know, the nation's greatest icon, the Statue of Liberty, was designed with the spikes of light around her head and a tablet in her arm to mimic Moses coming down from Mount Sinai with the Ten Commandments. And even Superman was modeled partly on Moses. You know, long before DreamWorks created that brilliant film, Prince of Egypt, and before Cecil B. DeMille's Ten Commandments, pop culture was introduced to Moses through Superman. You know, you remember his birth? Just as baby Moses floated down the Nile to escape annihilation, so too, baby Superman was launched into a rocket to avoid extinction. You see the parallels? But after examining the cultural and historical influence, Filer boldly proclaims, or he concludes this, he says, "You cannot understand American history without understanding Moses. He is the true founding father. His face belongs on Mount Rushmore." Now, of course, if it's central to American, to the American story, it's been even more central to the Jewish story. You know, Judaism is grounded in two key events, the creation and the Exodus. In creation, Israel discovers her confession that God is our creator. And in the Exodus, she discovers that the God who creates is also the God who challenges tyrants and redeems his people. You know, throughout the Old Testament, there are over 200 direct references and hundreds more allusions to the Exodus. And every year, the Jewish people gather to celebrate, as they have for some 3,000 years, the story of the Exodus in their Passover meal. The book of Judges is modeled after the Exodus, and each of the stories of God's deliverance of his people in this book act as like a mini Exodus. And when the children of Israel are in bondage in another foreign land, namely the Babylonian exile, the prophets come to them again and again, promising to them a new Exodus, when God would liberate his people once again. And so, you know, the Exodus is central to America's story, and it's central to the Israel story, and it's also central to Jesus's story. You know, when the gospel writers frame the story of Jesus, they frame his story in a way that intentionally echoes the story of Moses and the Exodus. I mean, just think about the opening book of the New Testament, the Gospel of Matthew. It is framed around five blocks of teaching, mimicking the five books of Moses. And in this book, Jesus flees a king who seeks to kill all the babies, and he is hidden away just as Moses fled and was hid away. And then he returns and goes through a water of baptism, and then Jesus goes into the wilderness, and then he goes up on Mount Sinai, and then he delivers his new law, as it were, with the Sermon on the Mount, saying that you have heard it said of old, but I say, as if to say, he was in some sense mimicking himself, but showing himself to be the true and the better Moses, who now is delivering a true and better law. And of course, on the night before he was crucified, when Jesus shares in a Passover meal with his followers, this meal is the Exodus meal. And he takes this meal and the story of the Exodus, and he reframes it around himself as if to say, I am the true and the better Moses, and through my cross and resurrection, I am going to defeat a worse and bigger Pharaoh, namely the power of sin and death and darkness, so that I could lead my people in a true and better Exodus, and then ultimately into a true and better promised land. And in the New Testament, you know, the New Testament authors pick up sort of the imagery that they caught from Jesus, and they draw upon metaphor and symbol from the Exodus story to help us understand our own salvation. And so, for example, Paul describes salvation as redemption from slavery. Does that sound familiar? You know, it's categories of the Exodus. And so the Exodus story is central to America's founding, and it's central to Israel, and it's central to Jesus and to the New Testament authors. And so it's a good question, you know, as we open up this new series in Exodus, what kind of role does this story play in your own life, your heart, your imagination, your view of yourself and God and reality and what God is up to in this world? You know, this story is intended to break into our lives and bring revelation about the God who challenges tyrants and liberates slaves and brings healing and freedom to his people. And so that's what we are going to be kind of like diving into throughout this story. You know, and oftentimes, you know, I've participated in a number of Passover meals. And it's interesting, you know, one of the things about a Jewish Passover meal is when they are reflecting on the story of the Exodus, you know, throughout the meal, if you've ever been to one, they tell the story of the Exodus. And what's interesting is when they speak of Israel and freedom and being brought out of her slavery, or Israel in slavery and being brought out of slavery and into freedom, it is constantly using first-person language to describe this event, to say that it is us who were enslaved and we are in need of freedom and God is acting on our behalf. And so in that way for them, and I think actually for the church, this story should always continue a relevance for us, because we are inherently, it's part of our very identity that we are Exodus people, that we are oftentimes enslaved people, enslaved to stuff, you know, in our own life, to dysfunctional relationships we feel like we can't get out of, or maybe to body image issues, or enslaved to our addiction to stuff or to technology or to pain meds or alcohol, or to our own need to hold on to grudges and bitterness. And we can feel overwhelmed and enslaved to all of this stuff, you know? And so this book proclaims to us the truth that God acts to bring freedom. And of course, this book is certainly not just concerned with individualistic areas of enslavement. It is also concerned with political and social structures that enslave people. And so in our day and age today, there are more slaves actually in the globe, around the globe today, than have ever been in the history of the world, you know, in sex trafficking and in sweatshops and in all sorts of dark ways that many ways the global economy depends upon. And again, this book should wake us up to the reality that God is the God of those who are disinherited and enslaved. And just as he acts for human liberation, so too the church ought to be concerned with justice and freedom for those who are enslaved and stuck in the darkness. And so this book, it teaches us so much. And, you know, there's four main theological themes throughout this book that we are going to find and we're going to develop. And I'm just going to tick them off now, and then we'll close out this episode. But four main themes that correlate to four main sections in the book. Theme number one is liberation. And so again, the movement in the opening chapters 1 through 12, is a movement from political and social oppression to liberation. And of course, even liberation in this book becomes a little bit complicated, because even when they get out of Egypt, sometimes they can't seem to get the Egypt out of them, you know? And I'm reminded of that line from Bob Marley's song, you know, Redemption Song, where he says, "Emancipate yourselves from mental slavery. None but ourselves can free our minds." You know, but kind of this idea that there are all kinds of slavery. And even if you get out of political and social forms of slavery, there can be other mental or emotional or relational places where we are stuck and enslaved and we can't find freedom. And so number one theme in this book is on liberation. But it's not just on liberation. The second main theme, and you see this in the next section of the book, is law. And so this is interesting, and this kind of challenges the view of freedom in our own culture. You know, oftentimes we think of freedom as the freedom to do what I want, when I want, and with whom I want. And I think in the American imagination, we think freedom is about utter and total autonomy. You know, autonomy is from two different words, auto or self, and then namos, which is law. And a lot of people think that to be free is to be a law unto yourself, to be running your own life, to be the captain of your own ship and whatnot. But this is just not the biblical vision of true freedom. True freedom is not a freedom simply from something, but it is a freedom to live under the good and beautiful rule of God. You know, it is true. I think in the words of Bob Dylan, you remember that song, "You Gotta Serve Somebody"? You know, it might be the devil and it might be the Lord, but you gotta serve somebody. You know, all of us becomes a slave to something in our life. And so ultimately, God liberates his people from Pharaoh, not so that she might simply go do whatever she wants, but so that she might come underneath the rule of a better Lord, namely Yahweh, and serve God. And so after God liberates her from Egypt, God brings Israel to Sinai, where Moses receives the law and gives it to his people. And it's just true. I think there's something that I think you're getting in this story that's true of humanity. You know, you've probably been in a place in your own life where you've been stuck, maybe in a very dysfunctional and maybe emotionally abusive relationship where somebody has control. There's just not normalcy, and or maybe you've been in just a really dysfunctional culture at work, where, you know, people don't show up on time and they don't respond to emails and people are passive aggressive. And when you're in these kind of toxic environments, you almost lose your bearings on what's normal. And when you come out of those, when you experience freedom from that relationship or maybe from that kind of toxic work culture or whatever, what you need is not to go and just be floating around, you know, in Nowheresville with no structure. What you want is actually to have a relationship with healthy structure and healthy dynamics, or a healthy work environment with healthy dynamics. And sometimes you get into that other kind of environment, all of a sudden you feel free because there's actually stability and structure and you know what to expect. And this is what God's law provides for his people. He doesn't leave them guessing what he wills or intends for the world. No, in God's graciousness, he reveals to them his will for creation and offers a counter ethic in an empire that wants to preempt and commandeer all of life. And so number one theme is liberation. Number two theme is law. Number three theme in Exodus is covenant. And, you know, when God invites Israel to Sinai, it's not simply that he delivers to her his law. He actually enters into a covenantal relationship. It's almost like a marriage ceremony. So I've performed a number of different weddings in my life, you know, dozens and dozens of weddings. And I love them. You know, I love to have the bride and the groom standing in front of me. And it's interesting because in the exchange of vows, a whole new thing is forged. And these two lives is now over. And a new kind of reality is created of two lives being brought together as one begins. And there's a sense in which when God takes Israel out of Egypt, he takes her to Sinai so that she might enter into a covenant, so almost like a marital kind of relationship with God. But immediately, as you read through Exodus, you realize this relationship is going to be tense and it's going to be difficult. And it's kind of like, I don't know if you've ever had some friends, you know, they get together, they're dating, and then maybe they get married, and you're just like, man, I don't know how this relationship is ever going to work. They just seem like they're not going to work together. And you see this, you know, in Yahweh, the God of Israel, you meet a God of utter and complete loyalty and faithfulness and holiness. But then God enters into this covenant, this marital relationship with Israel, and she is unfaithful, and she is unholy. And we wonder, how is this ever going to work? And there's this tension between the fidelity of God and the infidelity of his people. And yet, nonetheless, God remains utterly committed to his people, and he enters into this non-negotiable commitment to Israel. And this membership in this new covenant family, it's an invitation into an alternate kind of community, a new kind of family that's an alternate to the family or to the community of slavery that they experienced in Egypt. And so number three theme is covenant. So we've got liberation, we've got law, we've got covenant. And then the fourth and the final theme that is built out in the book of Exodus is divine presence. And so Exodus 25 to 40 is all about the presence of God. You know, it's interesting in, you know, all the cinematic depictions of the Exodus, of the book of Exodus, essentially, it all deals with Israel in Egypt, and then the plagues and these miraculous signs, and then the parting of the Red Sea and the heroic character of Moses, you know, and you get to Sinai and then the thing ends. But it's not where the book of Exodus ends. The book of Exodus goes on. And of course, at Sinai, she receives the law. She enters into covenant with Yahweh, the God of Israel. But something else happens that is so incredibly profound, and it becomes for Israel kind of like this is the thing that makes us unique about all of the peoples of the earth, is that God's presence resides with his people, and God will dwell with his people. But God's presence is not an unmediated presence. Remember, this is the holy, faithful God who inhabits an unfaithful and an unholy people. And so God's holy presence has to be mediated among his people. And that which mediates his presence, the structure that mediates his presence, is the tabernacle. And so God gives his tabernacle, and he's going to give a priesthood and a sacrificial system that will allow the holy presence of God to live amongst his people. But in God's presence, the children of Israel find a new source of power, you know, in contrast to all of the empires that Israel had been abused by that wants to empty life of transcendent resource. And in contrast to all of that, God's presence comes among his people. And so there you have the building of the tabernacle. Now, as we continue on through this series, we're going to build out each one of these themes. But it is significant to note the way in which these themes find continuity with the New Testament. Of course, again, as we pointed out at the beginning, you know, the very paradigm for understanding what God has accomplished in Jesus is the Exodus. Jesus has brought about a new Exodus to bring liberation and freedom to his people. So if you're a follower of Jesus, part of what that means is to be, you are a free person. You have been liberated, you know, or as Paul says in Galatians, it is for freedom that Christ has set us free. And Christ has also not set us free so that we can live autonomous lives. He set us free so that we can live underneath his law of love, you know? And so we have been invited to be people of the new commandment. And we have been invited to be people who embody in our life the ethic of love in every sphere of existence. And of course, we are a new covenant people. You know, God has invited us not simply to be subjects in a kingdom with him as our king and we as servants. He has invited us into covenant membership in his family. Or as the metaphor Paul will develop in Ephesians, we are the bride of Christ, invited into a covenant relationship with God, marked or to be marked by loyalty and faithfulness to Christ. And then we also have been people who are indwelt by the presence of God. You know, we are a new tabernacle, a new temple being built stone by stone by stone to be a dwelling place of God by his Spirit. And so these themes in the Exodus are essential for understanding who God is. They are essential for understanding the biblical story and redemptive history and what God has been doing. And they are essential for understanding who we are and what God is intending to do in this globe and in the human race. We learn it all in the book of Exodus. And so next episode, we are going to launch out in the text by looking at the first couple chapters. And so look forward to joining you then when we get into the text of Exodus.
Praise Father, Son.